Hello, and welcome back to They Made Another One, where each week we discuss an oft-forgotten installment in a franchise and see if you should check it out for yourself. I'm one of your hosts, Corey, and I'm not your fucking mommy. And with me, I've got Liam.
Can the tape kill him? Is the tape like an It Follows tape?
That's a quote from me.
It is. I watched this movie with Corey. And
I
got some of
that.
His quotes for you guys.
Oh, how many?
Corey predicted the It Follows sequel.
I did do that. They follow, man. I'm stoked. Mitch, also. Hi.
It's all your fault. What did you do? What did you bring here?
That could be from so many movies that we watch.
Your quote, Corey, was literally from the Orphan movie.
It was literally in the Orphan movie.
Amazing.
Really quick, yeah. The most They Made Another One movie of all time is about to come out. They are making an It Follows sequel.
I'm stoked, man.
I'm
ever since that movie came out.
So excited.
I don't think we should do it.
I was on the IMDb message boards, and all people were talking about was like, where's the sequel? They need to do a sequel called like It Still Follows or something. And
just wait,
it's
10
cool
years,
that it's,
bro.
It's finally happening. It feels like it's been longer than 10 years, to be honest.
Yeah.
Feels shorter.
Did you say we shouldn't do it?
I'm just being facetious.
I'm just trying
to like stir the pot. I'm bringing bad energy. I just ate a whole bunch of Brussels sprouts
today,
and I'm ready to fight.
You just cooked for 14 hours.
I didn't cook for 14 hours. I cooked for like maybe two.
Six
but
to
it,
seven
a lot of that was passive,
days.
Right? Because it was a simple roast with a chicken. You know, we roasted them in some Dijon, a little bit of vermouth, a bit of chicken stock.
Damn. Herb
de Provence.
I do have a quick question for you about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Who asked?
Well, you just said I cooked for 14 hours, and that's not true.
Oh, so now we can't all be facetious?
All right. I realize I don't have a monopoly on being facetious.
So yeah, we'll be hotly anticipating the It Follows sequel for whenever Coming Soon ends up being.
Coming soon.
Something tells me that... What?
I think it should just be called It Comes.
Do you think they're going to go Hawaiian for this movie? Because that would make sense in the context of like the narrative. It would make sense that the characters try to escape to Hawaii. They catch a plane and go to Hawaii thinking they can escape It Follows, and then it follows them to Hawaii.
And then they follow them there.
But
I mean,
what if It Follows
cool.
them onto the plane? That would be crazy.
It follows on a plane?
Mm-hmm.
That would be crazy.
Be over pretty fast.
Yeah, unless it's like a money plane where it has like two levels and you got more places to hide. Yeah,
unless you can pull a DB Cooper, it's over pretty fast.
Speaking of money plane, we could also do the reboot of Frasier.
Wah, wah.
The Kelsey Grammer sod.
I would do it. I would tell my dad what a podcast is. I would teach him about a podcast and then he could come on.
I bet he'd pick it up pretty quick. It's basically just radio on the internet.
Yeah, that's a good way to explain it.
I think that there's a lot of potential in getting all of our dads to do a podcast about a movie.
That would be very interesting. My dad isn't a talker, though. Are your guys' dads talkers?
Mine is.
I think I could get him going. I think if it was like the right movie, because he's a talker, but I don't know how, I'm not certain how analytical he would get into like the film itself, but he's a big like TCM guy. So I'm sure if we just put the right thing in front of him that it would work.
If my dad could stay awake for the movie, he'd be good to talk about it. But the thing is that he always falls asleep.
Does he have a dad nap where he's like sitting up in the chair and his chin kind of just collapses
yeah.
onto
and
his
chest? And he wakes up in the credits
Dude,
and was like, that was great.
My dad is the king of that.
Like, the dad nap?
Oh my God. Just like the sitting in a chair upright, but the head is down. Like, mm-hmm. And then the head comes up for a bit, head goes back down. Like,
yeah. And you say, Dad, you're sleeping. You're missing the movie. He says, no, I got it. I'm good.
Oh, this is really good.
<I'm awake." laughs> Or he hits you with this movie doesn't make any sense. I am paying attention, son.
Do you guys think that your your moms would be more or less talkative on this podcast.
My mom would kill it on this podcast. My mom is very talky.
I think my mom would also do great.
I think my mom
is also passionate.
I think my dad would do well, but I do think it would hinge on the movie choice, whereas I think my mom could just roll. That is my assessment of that.
I mean, she might be better at this than us then. Some of these movies, it's tough.
We got to be careful because they could take our job.
Well, lucky for us, they wouldn't be getting paid either, so it's not that alluring of a job to take.
Fair point.
You guys aren't getting paid? I must be getting your cut.
My checks are bouncing.
I get at least $2,000 a week. How do you think I can afford to rent all these movies every single week?
Are you getting paid in like Bitcoin? Like what are you getting?
I'm getting paid in grains of rice.
Speaking of movies that might be somewhat difficult to enthusiastically talk about, we watched The Ring 2.
Oh, as I like to call it, The Ghost Goes West.
I don't know what that means.
The Ghost Goes West is a great comedy from the mid 30s. And it kind of started like the Goes West title in sequels. You know?
Okay.
I didn't know that was a common titling device. The only thing I can think of is like Ingrid Goes West. And well, that's not
there's an American Tale, Fievel Goes West.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, the Goes West title it comes from The Ghost Goes West, as far as I know.
And now at what point in this anecdote are you going to tie it back into The Ring 2?
Well, because The Ghost Goes West. The Ghost goes to Chicago from Japan.
Uh-huh.
All the way from Japan.
Now
The Ghost Goes West.
I mean, the ghost had already... This is the second... It had already done that. Is that really a goes west? The ghost went west.
Stays west.
The ghost remains west.
The ghost went west.
Are they in Chicago? It was giving Pacific Northwest a little bit.
It's Chicago, yeah. Are you fact-checking me? You're being very quiet.
No, I just... What? Am I supposed to say every word on this podcast? You guys ever, fuck, I don't know. You guys ever see The Ring?
No.
Yeah. Which perspective are you more interested in, Corey?
Yours, because Mitch won't be able to say anything else.
Yeah, I saw the first Ring on TV around the time it came out, like between it coming out and the sequel coming out. And it was really scary as a kid. Funny enough, it wasn't the videotape stuff that scared me the most and the whole Ring girl. It was actually the scene involving horses on a boat. These horses like kill themselves, and this image of the boat just like having blood in the water in its wake really freaked me out as a child. I don't think I've seen The Ring since then. Most of my Ring consumption has actually come from Scary Movie 3, because I've seen that movie countless times. And that the main parody in that film is The Ring, and it follows the plot pretty closely. But yeah, that original one, as far as I remember, it's really good. It's like quite a thoughtful, psychological, kind of character-based mystery. Really freaky. There's a really good scare at the beginning of the movie that involves what Corey called in this movie the SpongeBob sweater face.
The striped sweater face, yeah.
And the striped sweater face. But they use that striped sweater face in the first movie, and it's killer. It's one of the best scares I've seen in a movie. I've gone back and watched that sequence a few times since. And then I also saw The Ring 2 on TV back in the day.
That being this movie, correct?
That being this movie, okay. Yeah. But even then, it would be almost... I mean, I probably saw it right around the time it came out, so like 17 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, there was like a slim chance, but an unlikely chance you meant the Japanese ones.
No, yeah, I've never seen the Japanese ones.
Corey, have you rung?
No. In fact, I imagine several of Liam's notes will be me saying the degree to which I haven't rung and the gradual realization that I have watching this movie that the thing, some of what I thought might be in this movie is just in the first Ring movie. And I should watch that. But no, I had so little understanding of what the Ring actually was that the only thing that I really knew was that there's a tape and a demon comes out of a TV. But I didn't know why, or like, I didn't even really know that that was a well. The well realization sort of came to me later. And I didn't know like why that was happening or what it meant or who it was doing it to or for what purpose that was happening. Sort of just knew that there was a tape and a person coming out of a TV, and that was essentially it.
Yeah, it was very cool watching this movie with you, Corey. Corey and I watched it over an audio call together and just occasionally voiced our commentary. And it kind of reminded me of doing the Scream 4 podcast with you, Corey, and gradually realizing throughout that podcast how little you knew about the Scream premise.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, like when we were watching this and you said, like, can the tape kill someone? Is it like an It Follows tape? That was so interesting to me because I guess I thought that it was a given that someone would know that, but yeah, totally isn't. So have you not seen Scary Movie 3?
No. I mean, I wasn't watching scary movies then, so I would have nothing to gain from watching a scary movie parody. I wouldn't know what any of it was.
Yeah, I guess those, in my friend group, those movies were just like so ubiquitous that even to someone who didn't watch horror movies, like they were just the thing of the time, you know?
Yeah, no, this is exactly the dead zone for me where like horror movies were coming out and not only was I not watching them, but I was like intentionally avoiding them because it was like not my bag. So like my blind spots in that respect are pretty profound. Just in that, if I missed it, I missed it quite hard.
I've got an alternate title.
Sorry?
So sorry. I just thought of an alternate title. The Ghostman Always Rings Twice.
That is good. That's really good. I like that.
Sorry to cut you off with that stupid aside, Corey.
It's okay. I do that all the time.
Yeah, I also like know practically nothing about the Ring, so going into this cold was pretty challenging. I felt like I kind of arrived to something late, and that there was all this pre-existing lore, and it was going over my head. But yeah,
so we're at least establishing up front that, in fairness, this is maybe one of those TMAOs where we would have benefited from watching the first movie.
Certainly, yeah.
Though I'm confident that having lore knowledge would not hugely influence how I feel about it ultimately, but, you know, I'm sure it wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, I think maybe even just having an appreciation for the other film can oftentimes help, even if it's not like lore-based knowledge. Just like if you like that film, sometimes you can like a sequel based on like the iconography, and it's fun to see all those things that you like again. But yeah, it's interesting. Even with all that said, though, I think there is some merit in discussing a film where you haven't seen the original just to see if the sequel holds up on its own, right?
I'd certainly hope you think that, because that's like the entire show.
It's the entire show.
That's like our whole premise.
Because we are very underprepared sometimes when we watch things.
I would not describe it as underprepared. I think we have a gimmick.
We have a gimmick. And the gimmick allows us to not see the original and just go in. It's always better if you have, but there it is.
I do it so infrequently that I would wager that it's better when you don't, for the potential comedic befuddlement factor.
That's true.
Or being so caught off guard by something that you then go to work the next day and decide that you have to show it to a coworker purely because it's hilarious. And there is an example of that in this movie.
Interesting. I'm curious to know which part.
Oh, I think it's pretty obvious what it is. Like, if it doesn't immediately come to your mind, that's kind of interesting to me. I think there's one sequence in particular that is like outright comical.
Is it the bit in the phone booth?
No.
Okay.
I barely even remember that, and I just watched the movie.
Yeah, I don't know.
Does Naomi Watts get in a phone booth?
I think so. I don't know if it's her. Who is it? Yeah, she does.
Are we the two most unreliable narrators on Earth?
We might be.
Well, while we try to get to the bottom of that, we can talk about the cast and crew, which includes Hideo Nakata directing, who was the director of the two Japanese Ring movies. He did not direct the first American one, but he did direct this, which I find interesting.
That is interesting, yeah. It's a really cool premise to bring someone over, particularly in the sequel.
The
like,
sequel,
I know
that's insane to me to do it in that order. Like,
yeah, because for The Grudge, they had the original director came and did the American one, but this one, they gave the original to Gore Verbinski, who I think is a great director. He did those Pirates of the Caribbean movies. He also did an awesome horror movie from a few years ago called A Cure for Wellness.
I knew you were going to mention that. That just strikes me as Liam Kaur.
To be honest, it's much more, I would call it much more Mitch Kaur than Liam Kaur, but it just hit me right when I saw it. Beautiful movie, but very, very strange. It's no wonder it didn't make all that much money because it is a very strange film. But he's a really talented director, and that talent comes through in the first movie for sure. I think you would really like the first movie, guys. I'd be very curious to hear.
Yeah,
what you guys
maybe we gotta get to that on our own time. Also, Hideo Nakata directed a spinoff of Death Note. It's called L Change the World, and it's like a live action Death Note spinoff.
Cool.
So that's interesting for us now that we all know what Death Note is. The movie is written by Aaron Kruger, who I thought was more of a TMAO household name than he is, but we'll remember him primarily for Top Gun Maverick, but also wrote the first American Ring, Scream 3, Ghost in the Shell, a bunch of the Transformers movies, live action Dumbo. I sort of intentionally picked weird credits for him because he's got just an endless list.
We probably also talked about him on the Scream 4 episode because he did touch-ups on Scream 4 as well.
Ah, that's probably it. Also, two other writers are credited on the movie. There's a novel credit to Koji Suzuki, who would have written the book that this is about, or rather based on, which also means he's got a credit on Rings, which came out in 2017 I don't know if it's a remake or a sequel or a spinoff or what it is, but it's another Ring movie.
Yeah, I've seen it, and I have a tough time even answering you. I mean, I guess it's like a reboot in that it's a lot of new characters, but I think it takes place in the same Ring
soft
universe.
Reboot.
Very bad. Real bad, that
okay.
one.
And also the original writer of the Ring movies in Japan, Hiroshi Takahashi. This movie is edited by Michael N. New, who worked on a bunch of the Marvel Netflix shows. So like Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, Luke Cage, and The Defenders. Also Spawn, Rocky V, A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Dead Silence, Night of the Creeps.
Oh,
and House.
Dang, that was a combo.
And also the direct-to-video movie Highlander Endgame.
That one lost me. That was a missed punch.
Yeah, what a run in these credits for Michael N. New. We've got cinematography by Gabriel Beristain, who did the MacGyver TV show reboot, the Black Widow movie and a few of the Marvel one-shot TV movies, Blade 2 and Blade Trinity, multiple Aerosmith music videos, and The Shaggy Dog.
Terrifying poster, that Shaggy Dog poster.
isn't it like a dog with Tim Allen's face or something sort of along those lines?
Yeah, like it's got like human Tim Allen eyes. Yeah.
The eyes are the gateway to the soul, and I don't like what I see in Tim Allen's eyes. The music is by Henning Lohner, who worked on a sort of motley crew of things, including The Ring, a series of movies called Laura's Star, Earthquake, The Fall of Los Angeles, In the Name of the King, A Dungeon Siege Tale, and Mimic 3 Sentinel. Another music credit goes to Martin Tillman, who primarily has a lot of music department credits for playing the cello. Like an insane amount of those, including all of the new Spider-Man movies, several of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, the live-action remake of Mulan, War for the Planet of the Apes, Live by Night, The Martian, Black Cat, Sex and the City 2, LMAO, Frost Nixon, The Dark Knight, Disturbia, Bad Boys 2, Black Hawk Down, and I stopped it that year because I could have just kept going. The man plays cello.
He chells. I wonder if I could beat him in chell.
Not to be confused with playing the NHL video game. This movie stars Naomi Watts as Rachel, friend of the show, of course, best known for The Book of Henry.
Which we didn't do on the show, but looms larger than perhaps anything we've ever done on the show.
It could be argued, I would bet if you were able to control F in audio podcast, that we talk about The Book of Henry a lot.
We need to do a bonus episode where we just get Mitch's thoughts on The Book of Henry.
We need to do a bonus episode that is a commentary of The Book of Henry, which is just Mitch's first time watching it recorded.
Yeah, that would fit. I mean, I remember when I showed you The Book of Henry,
my God.
I wrote down all your thoughts. You gave me a live commentary. I don't know where those pages are now, but they might still exist somewhere.
Hard copy notes.
Yeah, this was back before podcasts existed.
Yeah. also, of course, she's in a bunch of good movies like Mulholland Drive and King Kong and Birdman, and also Twin Peaks. And a movie that I was not familiar with, but I wrote down purely because its name. There's a movie called You Will Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger.
That's a good title.
It's a great title.
Kind of sounds like the plot of Mulholland Drive.
David Dorfman plays Aiden. He is the youngest old man to ever live. He has been talked about previously on this show in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 2003. Simon Baker plays Max. He's the mentalist on The Mentalist. And was also in Land of the Dead and The Devil Wears Prada. Kelly Stables plays Samara, who...
takes me back to our Halloween special. Sorry.
Interestingly, she is credited as Samara Morgan for no particular reason, because that's not like a hugely important detail to include. She's on Superstore and was on a TV show called The X's. She is in Horrible Bosses 2. And also Bring It On Again. We should do one of those.
Mm-hmm. Also, I don't know why I was so fervent in saying that it's Chicago. It's fucking Oregon. Anyway.
Oh, so the fucking Pacific Northwest, a.k.a. Yeah. Corey was right?
Corey was right.
Yeah, why did you think it was?
I'm an idiot.
Because, like, at first I thought you were thinking because, like, it's, like, the Astoria whatever newspaper, but, like, Astoria's in New York.
New York. I don't know why I thought it was Chicago anyway. We can just glaze over that.
No, I'm glad to be vindicated. Thank you. Sissy Spacek plays Evelyn, who is obviously Carrie from Carrie, Badlands, Coal Miner's Daughter, JFK. In the bedroom. Great stuff. And then the Wikipedia credits listing gets a little bit confused because it starts prioritizing how famous the person is now over how important their role in the movie is. And I'm going to keep that as intended by the Wikipedia page writer, because then it goes to Mary Elizabeth Winstead as young Evelyn Borden, You barely see her face, and it's for like half a scene, but she is in the movie.
Yeah, I looked into that more, Corey. Apparently, she plays that character in the unrated version, and so I'm wondering if maybe we didn't watch the unrated one, and she is in more of it in the unrated one. Or we watched the unrated one, and that's as much as you get. It could go either way.
The one we watched didn't seem particularly excessive, so I would assume that maybe there's more to it in the unrated one.
Could be. But sometimes those unrated cuts, especially in the mid-2000s, are kind of just...
Whatever.
Just marketing, just to have like an extra few seconds or something.
Yeah. Though I will say, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, effectively the patron saint of this show.
Yeah, I mean, Corey and I were talking about it. It's incredible how many movies she's been in on this podcast. The Thing, Black Xmas, Final Destination. 10 Cloverfield Lane, Sorority Row. No, she wasn't in Sorority Row, was she?
Final Destination, though.
Yeah, Final Destination 3. Incredible.
That's like five movies off the top of our head, which is a lot when you consider that we've done a lot of movies and we didn't even go double check.
And that's a great track record too.
Really
all
good.
Those movies are awesome.
Yeah, once I did just realize yesterday that all of my cast and crew notes back to November of 2019 have been saved in the track changes on Google Docs. So I'm going to eventually try to make that all into one master cast and crew sheet that gets updated as we go. And we will be able to control F for things like how many movies has Mary Elizabeth Winstead been in. And I think having that data will be nuts. Like,
it will be cool. We can create a TMAO trivia game.
And honestly, that sounds so fun. Elizabeth Perkins plays Dr. Emma Temple. She was on
R.I.P.
on
the,
what?
To that character.
Oh. She was on Sharp Objects and Weeds, as well as in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Big, like the Tom Hanks movie, and The Flintstones, but crucially not The Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas. One of several actors who realized that was a bad idea. Gary Cole plays Martin, who's the real estate agent guy. He's Ricky Bobby's dad in Talladega Nights, and he's in Dodgeball, and he was on Kim Possible and Veep. Ryan Merriman plays Jake at the beginning of the movie, our good friend from Final Destination 3, aka the Mary Elizabeth Winstead zone. Emily Van Camp plays Emily. She's in a few of the Captain America movies. Kelly Overton plays Betsy. She was on True Blood and is also in the film adaptation of Tekken. The IMDb cast list is quite a bit longer than that, but it gets a little bit in the weeds. So I think that is where I stopped. But I think that's about good. This movie is about a mom and a son who I thought... I'm frankly still not sure if it's her adopted son or her biological son. They have moved to the Chicago of the Pacific Northwest, and they are there to escape the ring tape from wherever they were before, where they encountered the ring tape. But oh no, the ring tape is here as well, and the demon from the ring tape is trying to possess her son for reasons, and in her attempts to keep him safe, people think that she's going crazy and like actually harming her son. So there's like a small element of needing to navigate that, but mostly it sort of spins off into this mystery of trying to learn more about the ring demon, and then they do learn more about the ring demon, and honestly, that's kind of it. And at the end, the ring demon is defeated by being trapped in a well. I really don't think I missed anything crucial.
No, that sounds pretty comprehensive.
Which might tell you something about the depth of the film. But I guess it makes the... I've changed my mind. I was going to say, I guess it makes the most sense to start with Liam as the ring guy, but I actually want to hear from Mitch first.
There are things that I like about this movie. I like the costume design. Yeah, there's some okay
stumes. That's
stumes.
Crazy.
There's some okay stumes in here. I like
that the most insane, unexpected first poll to have about this movie. Everybody
perhaps
just looks
that's
like
telling
it's
of how I feel about it. Perhaps that's telling of how I with how I feel about it. I mean, everyone's wearing clothes. They're very 2005. I feel like they'd be really in right now with some of these fits. But I like the way the movie sounds too. I think like the music is good. Hans Zimmer in form here. Great composer.
Well, Hans Zimmer does the theme. He does not do the full movie.
That's true. He does the theme.
I've credited the other two guys already, so let's put some respect on their names.
All right. Well, Mr. Tillman and Loner. But yeah.
I'm really impressed that you remembered that. I know I like just said it, but I'm like, I probably would have forgot. So like, good for you.
Hey, you know, it's what I do. I think the video gimmick here is like pretty interesting. I feel like I'm missing something, and like the rules of the way that it works, that this whole movie works, is kind of mysterious to me. Like the stuff with the deers, and everything else that there's it's a movie that I found difficult to get into, having not really seen the original. I didn't think that the tension building was like, I thought that it did a pretty competent job building tension, but I for some reason I just couldn't get into this movie. I think that Naomi Watts is really good, but I don't know. I had a hard time getting into this one for a number of reasons, and so it's just like it's purely okay for me.
That's an interesting assessment. I am a little shocked about some of that. But before we get to me, let's balance this out with the take of a guy who has at least seen The Ring, and go to Liam.
I wouldn't go as so far as to say this movie is okay. I think it's pretty miserable. I think it's a pretty pretty confusing, very bland. I think this totally reads to me like a follow-up to a massive movie where you've just you gotta get another one out there. You've got to hit some of the images that people remember from the first movie in order to excite them in the movie theater. They were lucky that they got Naomi Watts and her son to come back in this movie so that it seems like it is an entire intentional story being told. But I think their characters are very slight, and they could have gotten away with
there's not much for them, that's for sure.
not at all. Like you could have recast these parts or had it focus on a different family, a different mother and son, and the movie wouldn't play all that differently. This sort of feels like a theatrical direct-to-video movie to me. I think it is really corny. It doesn't have any of the narrative mystery that I think of when I think of the first Ring. This setting up of mystery and then gradually revealing what's truly going on. There's not a whole lot of that. There's more just scares for the sake of there being scares, and it's not super clear as to why we're seeing what we're seeing. Like there are scenes where Samara appears and then disappears, and it just feels like it is there to get a rise out of the audience. But if you actually look at the script and ask yourself, why is this thing appearing right now?
Doesn't make sense.
Reality or not? It really doesn't make sense.
Have you seen the Grudge 2? Because I feel like it has a very similar problem in that sense.
I don't know that I have, but I wouldn't be surprised that it does. I think it's a pretty common sequel problem. Mm-hmm. And I think this script is so poor. At least like the direction of it is poor. It just doesn't feel lively at all. And it's one of those scripts that even makes otherwise good actors seem like they don't want to be there. Like, I don't think Naomi Watts is good in this movie. It just totally feels like she's sleepwalking. So I'm not into this one in the slightest. I think the foundational focus on the mother and son is I don't feel sympathetic to this kid at all, which is tough, you know, whenever you're talking about a kid actor.
Well, this is an elderly actor.
I feel bad.
So it's fine.
That's you're so mean to this kid actor.
It's not that mean. It's just throughout our viewing, we felt strongly that the kid looked like a tiny old man. That's all.
Yeah, so I think I've in general made my point. Just didn't really connect, didn't have any of the pizzazz of the first one. Or any of the pizzazz of just like a good movie.
I agree with like basically everything Liam just said. I think this movie's pretty abysmal. Very surprised to hear Mitch say that he thought some of the performances were good, as I agree very strongly with Liam that this feels like everyone is absolutely sleepwalking. And not only are they given nothing, but I would less use the word confused to describe it than I would like nonsensical, in that, you know, you end up sort of watching things happen. Or, like, Samara appears or doesn't appear. Or, like, Naomi Watts goes to that shelter and then goes to that, like, psych ward and, like, ticks all these boxes of, like, going various places to hear information or talk to a person. And it is just an absolute cliche laundry list of stuff you see in horror movies.
Yeah.
I enjoyed sussing out for myself how the mechanics of the ring tape worked, not knowing. Like, I did find that a little interesting, but I kept lamenting the fact that you see so little of the tape, and the bits that you do see, they don't linger on for a particularly long period of time. And it seems to be glossing over that element, despite how crucial it must be to, like, the other Ring movie. And ultimately, what I realized is, I think what I need to see is the movie that's primarily about characters also needing to suss out what the tape is and what it's doing. I think that's the thing that I wanted more of here. But even with that out of the consideration, like, this goes beyond thin to feeling like almost non-existent in the forces that are attempting to drive it. Like, her relationship to the other guy that works at the newspaper is less than paper thin. Like, you could see through it if you held it up to light. Mm-hmm. And she has very little sort of motivation for her actions beyond kid exists, and there are no meaningful relationships outside of those two characters, so hinging the whole movie on their dynamic and having that not work is just
talking
not effective.
Talking
in dreams.
The mechanics of all that, I think on paper is kind of interesting, but the logic of the film is so skewed and inconsistent across the board that I think it affects its ability to like build tension in places.
Yeah, well, it also doesn't like visually communicate those things well. Mm-hmm. Which is frustrating because I was very struck by the aesthetics of the tape itself.
Yeah.
And
it's a shame.
I really not only wanted more of that, but I feel like the dream world, like we've seen so many movies on this show even alone that have like interesting dream world elements or like unreality sequences. And this just, it uses that so superficially, and it also doesn't feel like it's got a particular angle it has in terms of making a thematic point either about motherhood or childhood or the relationship between a mother and a child or like any of that. It really does feel like they realized, oh shit, we need to make another Ring movie. Like now, I thought we were going to have two more years to suss it out. And that just wasn't the case. And it feels slapdash and empty.
Yeah. I think what's it's interesting when you look at how this film was, I think, critically appraised too. Like some people think it's better than the original. I haven't seen the original, so I don't know. But
if that were true, the original must be like unwatchable.
Like, must be like Roger Ebert liked the sequel more, but he's often wrong. Or in my opinion, he's often
what
wrong.
What an enigmatic man.
Yeah, Roger Ebert has a quote that kind of made me think of Corey because Corey's said the movie is nonsensical rather than confused. And this quote, you can find it on the Wikipedia page. It says, from Roger Ebert, "The charm of The Ring 2, while limited, is real enough. It is based on the film's ability to make absolutely no sense, while nevertheless generating a real enough feeling of tension a good deal of the time."
That is the most lukewarm positive take I've ever heard on anything. Like, that sounds...
And I would argue that... like I already argued that the nonsensical nature of it affects its ability to build tension. So I don't know if I agree.
I don't think this movie builds tension well at all.
I think it's okay in some places, but it doesn't go to the lengths I think it needs to.
There's a handful of interesting like cinematography decisions it makes in terms of like framing that I enjoy, but it feels like it doesn't use it a lot. Like I like the shot of the two twins getting face paint next to each other and then like the kid takes a photo and seeing the composition of that photo and like having one like sort of close up in frame and like right up on the lens, and they do that a handful of times. But especially after seeing that sequence of him in like the bathroom with the mirror and taking the photos where it doesn't leverage that to the same extent, it's really frustrating that like there is a handful of like interesting ideas to execute on, and the movie just doesn't seem particularly interested in doing so. And without those there, like this is truly empty. Which is, it's tough to appraise it because of how thin it ultimately is. And then when you do get some of those scare sequences, they're like, they're perplexing more than scary. The sequence that I had to show somebody at work today is I showed someone the deer thing because it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, looking. I don't know. Like, it's the deer just, thing is pretty good.
And like, you can tell that the deer were not there because they're doing a very poor job acting against whatever they used as a reference, if they even had one. Like, the kid barely moves in that whole scene. And, like, they're not dodging away from anything. And the deer look like it was a big swing for 2005, but it's a bit of a tough one. And it's just that happens very suddenly. And to have, like, an action-based horror sequence just sort of appear out of the ether and it's deer slamming into a car in your Ring movie, it's just a really bizarre choice that I don't feel like lands particularly well.
I agree. That sequence to me felt, it was kind of disheartening because I was thinking about some unpublished scripts I've read, like Freddy versus Jason scripts, and those scripts have some really insane ideas in them. Like there's a Freddy versus Jason boxing match in hell and the audience is populated by Hitler and Ted Bundy and stuff. So the reason I'm thinking of that is this idea that as a scriptwriter, you can put anything on the page, anything that scares you, anything that you think would be cool that gets across the point you're trying to make. You put it on the page, and then it's the director's and the rest of the crew, it's their responsibility to figure out how to make it effective in the movie. And so on paper, I can understand this idea that like all these deer are flocking out and killing themselves, sort of analogous to this horse scene I hinted at the beginning, where these horses are killing themselves in the original movie. But this scene totally falls flat, in part because of some CGI that I don't think has aged well. I don't remember what it looked like at the time, if it was more effective, but now, like, even before the deer start killing themselves and they're just standing around, they don't look like they're there. I totally agree with you, Corey, that the actors are having a tough time making it feel like the deer are physically there. And so I was just thinking that, man, it's a shame that this scene, they're really trying hard to execute the writer's scene and make it an impactful moment, and it has the opposite effect. It is kind of comedic, whereas you get to the animal death in the first movie, and it's like, I don't know how that was written on the page. Maybe it was just written in a much easier way, you know, a horse going off the edge of a boat. But it just shows that you've sometimes got to be careful as to what you're going to put into a movie. And if you're going to swing for the fences, you really got to figure out how you're going to do it to not lose your audience. And I think this scene loses the audience, unfortunately. The audience being me. I don't know about everyone else, really. The audience being me and Hitler and Ted Bundy.
The more we talk about this film, the more I think that in my initial opening, I was being charitable.
There's nothing wrong with being charitable, but I think as like a baseline, yeah, like there's not a lot to particularly give the movie credit for.
And I don't know like how much I have to say about it, really.
Yeah, it's difficult because it is.
Other
such,
than I would have rather
so
been
hollow.
Watching something else.
Like, and then the other confusing scare is like the second phase of the bathtub scare, mm-hmm. where like all the water is being repelled out like onto the ceiling. Which is like,
oh, when like the drowning in the bathtub bit?
Well, like the demon is in the bathtub and yeah. like it is literally launching the water onto the ceiling.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like it's an enigmatic visual, but then you start thinking about like what it is that you're looking at and like why it's happening and where we're at in the arc of the movie, and you're like, what the fuck are we doing? And I think that there is nowhere near enough enigmatic visuals or like striking aesthetic approaches made to compensate for the feeling that you get of just, I have no idea why I'm looking at what I'm looking at. Mm. And once you start interrogating it, just how little there is to do with it once you're there, which does make it difficult to talk about as well. I would actually argue that I think the most interesting part of the movie is the beginning. Where the Ryan Merriman character is just trying in vain to get someone else to watch it, because there is like more meaningful feeling ticking clock tension of like, this guy needs this to happen right now. And I didn't know how the mechanics of this worked, but like it very quickly sets up like, if somebody doesn't watch this, like immediately this dude is fucked, and like it builds stakes quickly. I also think I'm just more compelled by the thought of, like, I think the idea of a group of people kicking this thing around to each other, trying to essentially dodge a demon, is really interesting. And it's more interesting than what we get here. Like, I think putting this into...
It should have been more interesting.
Putting this into a group dynamic and seeing how different people react upon learning what it is and how it works and what they need to do to get rid of it. And I know that is, like, a little bit Final Destination, or even speaking of, like, It Follows coded of, like, needing to get rid of the thing by however means you're able. But I'm much more compelled by that thought here than I am with the more like pseudo cerebral, but therefore much more generic because of how flat it is approach that they do ultimately take. That does sort of just put you in a bind of like, there is a limited sort of critical assessment you can give it other than it doesn't work.
Yeah. I think a group dynamic, following a separate group of people, whether that's teens or not, you know, that also risks cliche. I can think of many movies like that as well, but it is a cliche that I would be more interested in as opposed to the one that happens here. And that opening scene for me, I did think it was more fun than the rest of the movie, but I still wasn't as into it as you, Corey, simply because I knew what was going on from the very beginning. And so it simply felt like a perfunctory cold open kill to just like quickly remind the audience what's going on with the tape. Whereas it gives you a crash course as to what the rules are for people who perhaps haven't seen that original movie, because, you know, really quickly you asked, is this like an It Follows tape? And then the Ryan Merriman character is on the phone with his friend, and his friend just hits him with this wicked summary of like the
here's all the
tape's rules, where he's just like, yeah, you get her to watch the tape, bro, because if she watches that tape in 7 days, she's dead. I swear she gonna be dead 7 days later. And it just catches you up right away. And so I thought that was pretty hokey. And then after that, I think the movie just really isn't interesting at all, because it's sort of shown a lot of its tricks already, whereas a lot of the magic in the first movie was figuring out what this tape is and what the rules are and what exists on it and why does it exist on it, whereas this movie gets all that out of the way immediately, and then it sort of just becomes a drab possession film, I think.
Are there any other notes of mine you'd like to make sure that we include? Did I have any heaters?
Well, you definitely made fun of the old man child a lot.
Well, we both did that. I don't like the idea that that's being purely attributed to me. That feels a little bit unfair. He's the most like, he's like the oldest Culkin in the youngest body. It's like, it's witchcraft, dude.
And by the oldest Culkin, you mean like great grandpa Culkin.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what else this movie has to it. I mean,
damn,
I guess I should say, like, I didn't even have heaters. In fairness to the bathtub scene, I guess what was going on there is that like we learned that Samara was drowned, and so because she's possessed Aiden, she's like trying to get all the water away from her, which I think is kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, it's like visually,
I'll give it some credit,
interesting, but like that's it. It's like it's a little bit visually interesting. And then we've got Derek Henry Culkin just constantly asking what people are doing. And it's just like exhausting. I don't envy the kid, because he was not given a lot, and what he was given was like very repetitive. But yeah.
Yeah, poor guy. And then and the sequence of ending with her going into the tape, I just think that is so much more uninteresting than the alternative. I'm much more interested in Samara crawling out of the tape. I think that is a much scarier idea. It's sort of like Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, you got to strike that balance of being in a dream and having it still feel scary. Sometimes it feels a bit corny. And sometimes, like in Nightmare on Elm Street 2, when Freddy comes out of the tape and he comes out of the dream and he's in the real world, that could be pretty scary stuff, man. But then sometimes he can come out of the dream. And it, like in some of the stuff in the remake, and it totally falls flat. And that kind of felt like what was happening here, where we have instances of Samara not being in the tape anymore, like when she comes out of the body bag, and it just feels totally trivial.
Potentially not even real, like, really. Like, that she could have just imagined that for all we care, and it doesn't really foundationally or functionally, rather, like, change anything.
I do have a question for you guys, though.
Okay.
Have you ever seen something so scary that you just had to show someone else? Because that is a question posed at the beginning of this film.
I should have thought about this. I feel like the answer
no
has to be yeah, but, like, I don't know. I nothing comes to mind.
Two girls, one cup.
That's not scary. Oh, yeah. That's gross.
Yeah, my mind goes to shock videos as well, Mitch.
Yeah, that's where my mind goes, because maybe when I was a kid, if I saw something scary in a movie, I might show it to someone, right? But I can't think of a recent example.
The economy.
And so my mind just goes to old, like, shock videos and stuff.
Yeah, I think, like, things along the line of, like, that video of that car that is, like, a jump scare in disguise.
Oh, yeah.
Like, shit like
yeah,
that,
yeah, the zombie face comes up. Yeah.
But that was mostly actually people showing me that to fuck with me and not the vice versa.
That's right. It doesn't really seem like your thing to show that to people, because then that would mean you would have to watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I would show people stuff like that now. But, like, in my youth, that was just not really happening. Or I was on the receiving end.
Can you recall receiving anything scary? Anyone getting you good?
I mean, that was one of them. Like, I was at a babysitter's house, and it was her son. And, like, knowingly pulled it up on, like, the family PC in the basement and just, like, got my ass. But, honestly, maybe I blocked the rest of it out, but, honestly, no, not really. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, shock videos were huge, and I probably thought about that in part while watching this movie, just because they bring up that it's like this underground 2-minute tape that sort of has this this following to it, where it's like people hear about the tape and then they have to show other people, and that's totally what shock videos were in the 2000s. So I could think of so many, like, websites and videos that people would ask other people if they've seen, and if you hadn't seen it, oh, you're watching it on the school computer whether you like it or not. Very interesting time, that those internet days in the 2000s. I can think of one that happened on the podcast. I don't remember if this was recorded, so I might be outing you right now, Mitch, but I can think of when Mitch told us about that video of the dude doing that thing with his testicles.
I don't think that was on the pod, but...
Yeah, that was not on the pod. Yeah.
Right. I'll leave it at that then, but I guess that's an instance of you see something kind of scary, you gotta show someone.
The real genius.
Did you, the video where the guy shits out his balls?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know if I wanted to spoil the ending for people.
I was
going
to say, the real
geniuses
among us could try to look that up if they want, but the secret
I bet
has been revealed.
No, if you just type in guy shits out his balls,
it
will
come
up.
Well, now that you've said that, but Liam hadn't said that yet.
Even so, I bet the people who had seen it knew what I meant about doing the thing with the testicles.
There's
got to
be a
There's
finite
so much
number
you do
of videos of that happening.
And then beyond that, you know, just scary movies. You know, sometimes you see a movie that really freaks you out, has a really impactful scene, and so I would say to my friends, oh, you guys have to see this movie and just wait for the moment. You know, Lake Mungo is one of those movies. I know you like that movie, Mitch.
I do.
And that would be one of those movies that I showed to friends, and I was like, you just got to wait for it. Wicked scene in there.
Yeah.
There's something fun about that.
Is that the one
scared and
the cell phone footage clip, like,
yeah,
near the end? Yeah, that's terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. So I get it. And I think that's part of what makes The Ring a really effective premise. Just this idea of, you know, word of mouth and getting punished for, like, passing off fear onto someone else is a cool idea.
But don't watch this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what you could watch instead? Well, we don't really know yet either, but I'm going somewhere with this, I swear. So we're not doing the genre this week, which hurts me deeply. But we sort of kind of know what we're watching. We will be watching some Bionicle movie.
Hell yeah.
Next week, but incoming guest has not told us which one it is yet, so we don't know yet, but Bionicles are coming to They Made
Eric.
Another One. I mean, I know his name. I was going to, you know, let there be a reveal cuz nobody knows what that means.
All right.
Eric
well.
Could be anybody.
Right. I can't believe we talked about the shitballs video.
I mean, I can take it out if you want.
No, it's all right. You can keep it.
It's not really shitballs. It's just that's what, like...
Yeah. No, they come out clean.
Right, yeah. I think that's a crucial thing to clarify.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't worry, everyone. You can show this to your kids.
Yeah, if you... I mean, like... viewer discretion is advised. I mean, they showed the kid the ring too. Apparently you can show a kid anything. I guess he was in the movie, but like, so he probably knew it was fake, but that's all I got. Mitch, do you want to plug anything?
No, but I got this tape in the mail. I'm gonna go watch it. Goodbye.
Holy fuck, this dude's shitting out his balls.
That's the tape. Are you interested in plugging anything, Liam?
Sure. I've got a film writing alter ego, Graham the Haunted Marshmallow, on Twitter and Letterboxd. My username is Graham the Mallow. I have a Weezer podcast. We just released a new episode about the album Make Believe. You can hear us talk about that or see us talk about it on YouTube or Spotify. It's called In the Weeds with Weezer, the Little Bitches podcast. And I have a band called Guest Room Status, and you can find that on all the music services.
And you should. If you haven't yet, we've been talking about it for long enough that you've really got no reason to not be listening to that. I have another podcast called MK PodQuest. It's been on like a bit of a pause as we've been hashing out some scheduling stuff and eventually pivoting to a bit of a rebrand. But crucially, I report that I have received a book in the mail from Neil that is an important element of us wrapping that show up. So I'm now in a possession of a book, and at some point in the near future, book podcasts will be coming your way, so you can check those out. If you go to mortalcombatconquest.ca, you can find the deceased remains of my F1 podcast, which is currently inactive. You can find MK PodQuest. You can find a few other shows. You can find our show and all the other info that you might need. You can also find me on Twitter, if you're still on there, at A Pastel Heart. That's also my username on Blue Sky, if you're on there. And I'm on Letterboxd at Mr. Corey Price. Thank you once again for listening to this episode of They Made Another One. You can find us all over the internet on Instagram at They Made Another, which is all one word, and on Letterboxd at TMAO. You can find episodes on all the fucking podcast services anyone uses nowadays. You know, just get online. You'll find them. You should rate and review us. Leave us a nice 5-star rating if you're having a good time with the show. That helps get us in front of new listeners, which would be greatly appreciated. You can reach us via email at tmaopodcast@gmail.com with recommendations for future episodes, questions, comments, and a video that you showed people because it was fucked up. Our fantastic thumbnail art is done by Jade Dickinson. You can find on Instagram at Jade Sketches. And with all that out of the way, we are going to meet the Toa next week on They Made Another One.